We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, welcome back to Proof to Product. Today's guest is a familiar voice. It's Biff Ulm of Minnesota Nice Enough and the retail shop Zizers. Biff and I chatted earlier this year, pre-COVID, about how he has multiple revenue streams, how he tracks his numbers, and the importance of studying what bigger brands are doing, and even brands outside of our industry. So that is episode 146 if you want to listen in. Now, Biff is one of our Proof to Product Lab members, and about a month ago, he shared a really rich and in-depth post about how he, as a shop owner, is navigating COVID. His post inside of our lab's program sparked a lot of great conversations and ideas, follow-up questions, and I wanted to bring some of that conversation to all of you here on the podcast. So on today's show, we are doing a COVID check-in with a store owner. Now, Biff is just one store owner in a sea of many, but I think it's important for you to hear how your wholesale customers are faring right now. What are they focused on, and how are they adapting to the changes that are brought on by this pandemic? So on today's episode, Biff shares how his overall sales for the store have fluctuated, how his buying strategies have shifted from larger orders that were planned further out to smaller, more consistent regular orders. He shared new marketing strategies that he and his team have implemented to build relationships with their shop customers. And Biff also shared two important nuggets that I want you to listen for. He says, you can't be afraid to fail, and you have to make a statement with your product. So listen out for those. But before we jump into this conversation, I wanted to answer a question that I received about our Proof to Product Labs program. Sarah asked, what types of companies are in Proof to Product Labs? And this is a great question. We have manufacturers making paper goods, jewelry, apparel, candles, embroidery, and scrapbooking kits, and we have a variety of people making home decor and gift items. We also have different segments, right? We have store owners and sales reps. We have service providers who work with product-based business owners in our community. So we have a wide range of perspectives and resources and discussions happening in there every single day in Proof to Product Labs, and lots of ways for you to connect too. So if you are looking for a diverse community and coaching support, definitely check out my 12-month group coaching program called Proof to Product Labs. You can get all the details at prooftoproduct.com/labs. I should also add that members receive access to past programming, and we recently did a coffee chat Q&A session with Biff. So if you want to learn more from Biff after listening to this episode, definitely come join us. But let's jump in. There's lots of great nuggets here, and I can't wait for you to listen to today's episode with Biff Ulm. Hey, Biff, thank you so much for coming back to Proof to Product. I appreciate it.
It's so exciting to be back.
So last time we talked, it was January 30th. You just reminded me of this.
When
we talked, the episode aired a little bit later, but that was like right before everything started unraveling with COVID, right? Like that's when things were just, we were hearing news of overseas issues and it hadn't hit the States yet. But really today I'd like to focus on kind of making this a buyer check-in, like a check-in about COVID stuff. So to kick this off, let's give people a rundown of your shop. Where is it located? Who does it serve? And what types of products do you carry?
Yep. That's awesome. Yeah. It was like 2 years ago we spoke in COVID time, right?
Yeah, I know, right?
It feels like that. So
it does.
We've made a lot of adjustments, I know, in the retail front, but our retail store, we're definitely a gift boutique, carry a wide range of products. I think actively, we probably are buying about 300 different product lines, just to give you an idea. So it's everything from greeting cards, which I know a lot of your audience and paper products would be familiar with, to kitchen, to jewelry. We have gifts, kind of some edgy, quirky items. I don't even know how to classify that, but it's a big category for us. We also carry footwear. We don't do too much in apparel. I would say that's the one thing we don't do. And even some level of kids' toys too.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So you closed, you and I were talking before we started recording, and you guys closed in mid-March for COVID.
We did.
You reopened, you said, right before Memorial Day. Is that correct?
Yep. We reopened the Thursday before Memorial Day weekend. And for us, just to follow up who we serve, we're in a large second home market. So right. I'm in the heart of what Minnesota's Lake Country is. We are about 2 hours from Minneapolis. So one thing in Minneapolis in particular, a lot of people have lake homes, they have cabins and that type of thing. And they actually, some of them will pretty much move up to this area in the summertime. So those are the customers that we're open year round, but those customers, we really, really spike from Memorial Day to Labor Day weekend.
Which had to have been a tough thing. Well, you opened before Memorial, so you weren't closed for your entire big season then. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. You know, when you reopened, what kind of safety measures did you put into place in the store?
Yep. So we figured out what our capacity was with the state. We were really, really fortunate. Our county actually was very proactive. So we could reach out. We have a county public nurse. I don't even know what that title would be, but we reached out to her and she was awesome. Walked through the store with us, helped us see blind spots to what we just don't have that expertise at all. So helped us kind of walk through that. And we estimated that our capacity was probably somewhere around 100 people that we could fit into our store. And then we reduced it. We felt safe and comfortable with about 40 people at a time. So we created a queue line outside when we get busy, installed plexiglass. And we didn't have a statewide mandate for masks like a lot of people did, but we mandated it straight out of the gates on that side.
Did you have pushback from that by customers?
Yes. Yes. And that was something that I was so surprised of how political it got so fast.
Yeah,
because we were in, excuse my language, I just have no other way to say this, but we were damned if we did and damned if we didn't. Like either way, you had to pick a side you were going to land on, and you were going to offend someone if you didn't require masks or you did require masks. We erred on safety, and it wasn't a political decision for us. It was like, what happens if our team gets COVID? What happens if one of our customers gets COVID? And even worse, what happens if someone died because of the disease? So it was a really easy decision for us, but it wasn't an easy decision to actually carry out because people became quite vocal with it. And I would say possibly even we lost some customers due to the decision, but hopefully in the long run, you know, people get to unpack that and kind of reevaluate where they landed at that time too.
I appreciate you sharing that because I don't think a lot of people understand the burden that put on shop owners. So not only are you concerned for your own personal safety, your family's personal safety, you're concerned about the team of people working for you. You're concerned about the customers that are coming in. And when you're having to kind of go to battle, for lack of a better word,
Absolutely.
With people to say, no, this is in the best interest of everybody. So I applaud you for sticking to your values there and holding the line. And I thank you too for helping to keep everyone safe by initiating that. I know too, from talking to other retailers, they've started that queue process outside to manage the people, but a lot of people have also had to hire additional staff to implement these things. Did you have to hire additional staff for that?
Ironically, we got a little meaner and leaner. There's definitely, how do I say it? We definitely were looking for specific staff for that maintaining the door thing. That's not a skill I don't think everybody possesses. And there are some days that we don't need to do that, you know, and I think that's the hard thing to plan. Anyone who's been in retail, I mean, even in wholesale, it's like people are like bananas, right? They come in bunches. Like all of a sudden your orders will all flow in 1 week and then you're sitting around for 2 weeks. And that's very much so with our business too. So just planning for that piece is always a challenge on that. Yeah. But it does have to be someone who can definitely has really, really, really strong communication skills at the door because you're going to take some heat. And I think that's something that bothered me too, was like, some of the abuse that my team received, like I'm okay with it. Like that's my choice to be in business and to do this. But I don't know, just if anyone's listening out there and just really respect people in retail, because we see a lot of stuff on a day in and day out basis. And I always told my team, it's like, you go to one of our managers or you go to me directly and they don't need to stand for it, but it still hurts, you know,
when, of course,
when that piece is coming in. Yeah,
of course. And you as the employer want to protect your employees. Like you were saying, if it is directed at you directly, that's one thing. But when you see your team, I would have a hard time with that as well. So, okay, let's talk about sales. How have your overall sales for the year been? You don't need to, you know, share specifics if you're not comfortable, but are you up overall? Are you down overall compared to last year?
Yep. It's just been odd. No, June started out slow. I'll be very honest. We tracked off probably, and this is off the top of my head, but it's going to be rough ballpark, right? I would say like 20-25% off in June. Once, and surprisingly, our 4th of July, which is a big, I know for some people, like, especially if you're in Metro, like 4th of July is probably not going to be a real busy time with people I network in Minneapolis. Like, oh no, that's a time we can actually enjoy off. It's kind of slow. Right. But for us, 4th of July is very big because everyone is at their cabin or visiting our area. It was a smidge on the slower side. But then once we got to the other side of the 4th, then we just pretty much hit our numbers.
Your normal numbers.
And then right now we're actually we are busier. And I think that's because more people are working from home. They are enjoying their cabin places remotely. Yeah. And we have in our state, it's kind of mixed, but some are doing distance learning, some are doing hybrid. There's very few schools that are doing full time. So that's allowing families to both work and do school from wherever they want. And there's some flexibility with that. It's kind of cool. Like if you really think about it, how we can be productive on our own terms and, you know, you're judged more for your productivity than just showing up. Now that said, in retail, we have to show up.
Like
a good retail business is to have a very consistent and dependable hours. But yeah, there's other things. Yet you have a lot more flexibility with how you work.
Absolutely. I know my family's all doing remote learning. So my husband's home, my 4 kids are home, and I'm here too, of course. And I've definitely thought of, okay, where can we go for even a week? And, you know, we just need strong internet and we'll be good.
Just to
change it up, change the scenery a little bit. But
exactly.
Yeah, it's tougher when you have an actual shop that you need to show up for and customers. But how have your wholesale buying tactics and strategies shifted with COVID? Are you ordering less frequently or more frequently, smaller volume perhaps, just to be conservative with cash flow and inventory?
We're definitely fast and furious with what we're ordering. I would say probably where it's affected the most, and I don't know how many companies that we're reaching right now for wholesalers are in this method, but that early buy, that preseason buy, that I have just, it better be a really dependable company. Like that is not an attractive, like saving 5% free freight. I like free freight a lot, like as a buyer, like, but that's not as attractive for me right now to try to be ordering something 4, 5, 6 months down the road. Because honestly, just like where I was kind of kidding in the intro, it isn't kidding. Like that's an eternity right now in where we could or we could be.
Oh yeah. Every day feels like a week or a month or whatever. Yeah. So it sounds to me like you're not ordering for later ship dates so much, but you are ordering like now for as ready, ASAP and, type orders.
Yeah. And some stuff we are pushing out ship dates. I mean, there are in certain segments and certain buyers or certain wholesalers, they're being very, very upfront with us too. Their lead times are a lot further out, you know? So we are buying. Yeah. It's kind of harder to navigate that piece of it, but it might be that we're staggering orders and then we're adjusting as we get close to our ship date, which is not ideal for either us or the wholesaler, but we've had some good partnerships that are willing to do that where they know they're 5-6 weeks out and we've gotten, you know, we may have 2 orders staggered and we can just tweak them a week before just a little bit. And we're not changing them, you know, drastically, but it's just hard to know what you're going to have on the shelf. Some items, you know, that you're going to need in that type of thing too. But I'm putting in purchase orders fast and furious right now. It's just it's not at the volume that I used to, and I'm not allowing inventory to carry me a month. I'm looking for it to carry me more 2 weeks.
Okay. My mind is going a couple different directions with this. One, thank you for expressing the need for flexibility right now, because I think that's needed on all sides of, these types of deals. I think everyone needs to, we need to have our terms and conditions from the wholesale side of things, and you guys need to abide by those terms, but we also need to be flexible in practice, just so that understanding everyone's going through different circumstances. So one, thank you for addressing that. I think secondly, it is really fascinating to hear, you know, when we talked previously, you had some very, like, you had systems in place for how you were ordering. And I know that you still have those in place.
We do.
But things have had to shift, right? Things are moving faster. You're ordering in smaller quantities. You're having to order more frequently now, just to make sure that you're balancing the needs of cash flow with inventory. It's a very delicate balance, right?
It is. And I'm even seeing it, though, on the wholesale side of things. I don't want to call out a specific company, but let's say this, I've got a big company and very, very big in the hydration world of things, and where we to get product, to be guaranteed product, because they're hot in the category that they are, we do need to do our preseason buying. So like right now they're looking for spring orders to get that product. Well, what they did for us, because they were having a hard time guaranteeing their inventory, they stopped all those POs, and I've had that in the shoe world and everything. So they basically canceled our preseason orders and said, now you need to order just at once. And maybe they were even over leveraged. I've had a number of companies that are no longer operating on terms, and they've went to credit card only too. So, and we have flexibility with that, you know, and so there, it is a working back and forth type thing, but communication becomes just so, so important when that stuff happens, because we still need inventory and we need to be able to pin down what we can expect. But it does, it's requiring more work to do the same amount of volume. And I think just something to understand, it's happening on both sides. And if you have that understanding, you can kind of give each other grace and get creative of how to problem solve that and just have a, have a better conversation too.
Yeah, absolutely. Which kind of leads me to my next question of, like, we know that communication is so important.
Yes.
Important in business, but particularly when it's the B2B type of situation. What else can manufacturers and product makers do right now to support their wholesale customers, the stores and shops that they're working with?
That's a big question. I don't know if there's one thing. I'm just trying to think of an example too of a company that has done things. There's some people, like, being more just in time. There are parts of the industry that are not just in time, meaning like Gift is really good about being just in time. Mm-hmm. And there are some really antiquated ways in certain product sectors. I'll just be honest. Footwear, with what we carry in clothing, they are not just in time suppliers.
Define what just in time means for anyone that's listening that doesn't understand.
So it means like, and I know, how do I say it? Just fulfilling to have staff in warehouse, like on my product side, I understand that. So if I put my wholesaler's hat on that, like having some grace to expect an order, if they call me today, it might not go out tomorrow. But for me, just in time is that if I place an order and I say it's an ASAP, it's at once order, that I can have it in my hands within 3 weeks. And I would consider that, you know, it would be in some product categories, like, if you can get it out in 48 hours, that's awesome. But honestly, as a buyer myself, I don't expect anything for 3 weeks. And if we're in that time frame, we're good. And if you can clearly tell me what your lead time is, that's even better, you know, on that side, just as long as I can plan. But there's a lot of products that you just won't get unless you order it 4 to 6 months ahead of time. So that's crazy, crazy. That's just crazy, crazy lead times. That I just think the industry needs, those industries need to shift, because we have technology now, especially on the manufacturing side. And this is me putting my wholesale hat on to do it. It's like, we've pivoted our business, and that's a huge competitive advantage, is that we can deliver much faster.
Yeah. I think it dials into, well, I agree. We need to be able to ship out product and have the inventory. If we're going to be wholesaling, especially for my audience in the gift industry and everything, you guys need to have inventory in stock, and you need to be ready to ship it. And if you are you know, seeing delays in manufacturing, or you have items that are back ordered, just clearly communicate that at all times so that buyers know what to expect. Because as you're hearing from Biff, they're planning things out. They're counting on you to deliver on time. Like, there's certain expectations that really just can't be, they can't be too loose, you know?
Yeah. So. And putting my buyer hat on too, there's usually in most categories, there's multiple wholesale. Like, we sometimes get trapped in our own four walls. I do anyway. I speak this experience. Like, and it's in my retail wall too. Like, I operate in a town that has 60 specialty boutique shops right next door to me. We're four blocks long, and you know, I've got a lot of competition. And of course, inside our team, we think we're the best because it's our team, and we love each other, and we work together, and we've got a great dynamic. But the simple fact is that people have a lot of choices, and every one of those stores in our town is someone's favorite store. And that's the same on the wholesale side of things. Everyone's in my categories, I have competition. And a lot of times the reason I am buying from a company, just to be quite honest, is because I click with them, you know? And so just being genuine in that type of thing, and just understand, but if so many times you don't follow through, you're going to go find another supplier. Like, it doesn't really, there are some products that it matters if we run out of on the shelf, but this is what I've found through COVID. And there's sometimes it just matters that we have products to sell. Does
totally.
That make sense?
No, it totally makes sense. So I want to reiterate this. You're going to people you have relationships with to buy first, people that you enjoy working, you know, they're going to deliver on time, you know, they have quality product to sell. Yep. So you've got that built-in relationship to lean on, but you're also looking for new products, and you're looking for to continue building those same types of relationships with new manufacturers. But at the same time, it's kind of a riskier time to do that, right? Or are you actively going out and seeking new lines and products?
We are, and this is really hard to say, but it's just going to be the honest truth. And I think people need to hear this, is we have companies that are really good at reinventing themselves over and over. And that's that. And I don't mean totally reinventing. Like, I don't mean throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Like, we, when I say reinvent, but they're constantly coming out with new designs. They're constantly staying on edge. I'll take a real world. I like real examples. So a company that we do really well with is like a category that is snarky dish towels, right? Like, socks we could go into too, but we'll choose snarky dish towels right now. And there's a whole bunch of companies out there, but we've been with Twisted Wear for 6-7 years, like since they were just a little temp. And now they're, you know, everywhere. And that's super, super exciting to see. But they're constantly pushing that envelope. They know their best sellers. They sell the best. If something's kind of not that great, it's in the middle, they get rid of it and they bring something new in. So as long as they're doing their job and keep coming and their sales are looking good, we're not looking to move away from them in any way, shape, or form. And I just got an order in from them. I'm ordering from them consistently. So they're at the top of mind, and they're great communicators. They send out, you know, trade shows aren't happening, so they send goodie boxes of product to us. They're always top of mind, and they do it in a creative and fun way. So we are looking for new products, and it's a proven product. So when they bring something new, like, we're pretty easy buy. Like, honestly, you could almost even just send me an email and say, hey, you need this one, and just add it to your cart and on the next order, and we'll do that. But at the same time, we have companies that haven't moved and haven't adjusted, and they maybe were good products for us for 2 years or so, but they haven't evolved any longer. So, and there's always a curse. Like, after 2 years, that third year is really dangerous coming back with the product that hasn't evolved. Now, there's some categories, kitchen would be a prime example. Like, honestly, like, how are you gonna evolve certain things? But even a good kitchen company is going to be looking at the trends of colors, and they're going to be changing. You know, a spatula can only be made so many different ways, but they're still going to be looking for just little ways to tweak and to do that type of thing. So we are filling those middle of the road. I mean, that the poor performers are easy to spot, and you're not going to go back there. But the mid performers right now, we're not going there, and we're bringing in new to to replace
to fill that in. Okay. Yeah. So I like to hear that you're continuing to work with the accounts that have been strong sellers for you. I like hearing that you are seeking out new brands and people that are up and coming. I know that the advice you just dispensed was more of a bigger picture of you want to see brands that are evolving. But I also have to ask, there were a lot of manufacturers at the beginning of COVID that kind of just paused because and understandably so. Everyone's dealing with a whole lot of other circumstances right now. And so this is not said out of a place of judgment. It's just an observation I've had. There were people that like kind of stopped selling, stopped talking about their products, stopped doing marketing and promotion. Maybe they felt like it was salesy or icky or whatever. But there were people like you on the other side that were needing their products. So was that difficult for you? Did you see a lot of manufacturers slowing? Like from the wholesale side of things, it's much harder to build that momentum up again when you do start selling. But what did you see on from with your retailer hat on? Like, what did you notice about things? Did you notice any of that? Or
I didn't, because you know, the timing, I'm coming out of January again, coming out of like, I think, I don't know if we talked about it here or was the pre-recording, but after like, I'm in January, so I'm coming out of show season.
You had enough stuff at the time.
We were looking at all types of new launch, you know, January is a huge month for new product launch. So we were looking at, you know, really gearing up for our busy season. So we saw all this new stuff. We put orders on hold for it. And to be honest, that first 2 weeks of like, when our state locked down and we started seeing it, I stopped too, which was really weird. It was a tough time. It was like kind of, there was the grieving process. And it was one of the first times that I've been fortunate to be involved in a lot of different businesses. And I seriously had these thoughts enter my head, and it's just not usually who I am, is there was thoughts like, this could be one of the times I lose a business, and it's not any fault to anything that I have done.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think we all were there. And, you know, a lot of people have at that time were saying like, oh, we're all coming together as a country, you know, comparing it to being in war or something like that, like World War, say it was the last great World War, where everyone came together to do their part. Like there was a little, there was an opportunity to be there. But we were each doing it in isolation, where in the past, people maybe, you know, worked in factories and did things. We cut back on our resource use and like all that intentionally, but we were all doing it in vacuums and not having people to unpack that with. And I think that was really hard.
Like, I think so too. Looking back, I agree. It was definitely hard. And I also want to like, just say again, like, I know everyone was dealing with different circumstances. Some people had health issues, personal circumstances, in addition to the business decisions and choices that we had to make. But I do think it's a fine line, especially running a very small business, where for most of my audience, majority of the sales and the marketing and the product development, all of it falls on one person or maybe one or two people. Yeah. And so it was a tricky thing. And I'm not saying if people stopped or paused that it was the wrong decision. I just know that it's much more difficult when we do pause to then regain that momentum.
It is. So what happened with me, and just to share my personal story, and I'm sure it would be awesome to hear all types of personal stories. I get a lot of energy out of hearing what other people did, but I'm like, wait, people still want stuff, and everybody's trapped at home. Just like all of a sudden I understood I wasn't like, once we understand, okay, we are alone. Like we're trapped with our little family for better or for worse and everything that's going on in that dynamic, but other people are feeling the same needs that we want. So we went, well, the first thing that I thought to do is I'm going to go online. And then I had a really great mentor of mine said, don't do it. Like, A, you carry way too many products.
You do have a lot of SKUs.
We aren't set up to be that. And she's like, you use video and Instagram to reach out to entertain your customers just like you do here. So we went live daily at 11 o'clock. We tried to go for an hour. We didn't start there successfully. The first one was probably 15 minutes and it felt like an hour.
Of course.
It was like 20, but we took a QVC approach, and we had four members of our team who would get on video, and we would just talk about products that we loved, what we were doing at home. Sometimes it was just talking and they would be in the chat. And then we would say, hey, you know, here's puzzles. Here's, you guys are cooking. Here's some of our favorite cooking things, and share a recipe with them. And we weren't set up to the to the level that we could actually cook things. I wish we were, but we just did it. And we started off with just using our cell phones. And then we slowly kind of grew that, but we did that during the whole part of COVID. And
I love this.
It was so great.
I love this because you're right. Instead of shifting all your products online, which would be a huge undertaking and financial investment, jumping online and, you know, I told my mastermind group early on in the in all of COVID, I said, look, now is the time to do anything imperfectly. Like it's a time to play. It's a time to figure it out, to try things. Nobody's going to judge you if something is messy or not as polished as you'd like it to be, you know? And so I love hearing that you guys did this and and it's obviously had pretty good results too, right? You engaged with your audience, you got some more sales, all the things.
I know we built our brand up so much over COVID. Just the relationships that we have with people and them understanding that we were there for, it's a long-term piece of it.
Yeah.
And I'm here to build any business, whether it's on the retail or the wholesale for a long-term. Yeah. One like real actionable thing that kind of came out of it. The other thing is like as a business, we use regular landlines, you know, like the numbers come in. And so we started to sell through social media, but we wanted to decrease that and then have a email. Okay. I'll just get to what we did is I found a little company and there's multiples, but I was really, really happy with them. I don't get sponsored by them or anything. And they're a small company. They were super great, but we transformed our landlines into text lines. So we use landlines, but they come in through an app that if someone texts those lines, it goes to our entire team. And then we could interact with them personally. So we became personal shoppers. So think of almost Stitch Fix like.
Yeah.
People were saying, well, I can't be with my nephew. I just remember this one story. I can't be with my nephew. Super important. He's 13 years old, loves science and building stuff. I'm always there for his birthday. We have this. Can you send him a gift? And we would be curating gifts.
That's
and
amazing.
We did that via text, which if you think about it, people answer a text. So we actually created this huge text database and it works just like email, but it's in text form. And it was called Avocado. Like avocado, but we can put it in the show notes, I'm sure. And I can get you that information too. So, but they were a company that was really, really, it's amazing to do that. And then we had an opt-in thing. Can we send you, and not like, you know, big companies are using it, like Home Depot, for some reason, I get Home Depot texts all the time because I opted in at once. And there's some of them that kind of become annoying. And if people misuse it, it can become spam-like.
Yeah.
But we don't overuse it. And it is a tool that we are still using today to do that. And then we've created reservation systems too in our store. Even we have people now who don't feel comfortable shopping during normal hours. Mm-hmm. So we are using text as a huge way. And it's so fast, it's so quick, and there are no barriers to entry. And then to do it, we use Square, and we can just email them a link to pay. And it's so fast. So like we take a picture of the items that we're sending you and they are assigned a personal shopper. And it's just an experience that I think could really work for a boutique type business. So
I love this idea. I also have on the wholesale side, some of my clients are doing FaceTime appointments with their wholesale accounts. And, you know, in 30 minutes, one of them wrote a several $1,000 order. And it was just, you know, making it easy for people. So actually, let me kind of round out this conversation. You and I are both advocates for making the buying process as easy as possible on the wholesale side of things.
Yes.
So what does easy buying look like to you as a retailer that's purchasing from other brands?
Yep. So the easiest way is if I have I don't know why I don't do this directly with, this is interesting. We may have to unpack this, Katie, as I'm thinking through this, but I don't do this usually directly with my wholesale accounts, but I give a lot of reps my sales numbers for the last month. And I say, here's what I've done in this product. Write me an order.
And you just let your reps fill in.
Right. And I say, you know, they give me the order back and then they're like, how does this look? And I'm like, and then usually the rep though will order less than I do. This is Well, wholesalers might not want to hear this, but they order and they've seen so many orders come through. They can see where my blind spots are. Like, yeah. Oh, you're missing, like you've been selling this so well, you should have this product and your numbers are off. And they'll even tell me that on that.
So do you ever turn to like an individual brand? I know you do a lot of ordering through reps. Do you ever turn to individual brands and say, I've got a $500 budget, like fill it in, like tell me what I need to be ordering? Or do you prefer to go and pick and choose from an individual brand?
No, I do that all the time.
Picking and choosing or letting them
choose? I will do it with some brand, but there's still brand reps. This is kind of interesting. And this is where I'm saying it. So like a bigger brand, trying to think of one here. Hydro Flask would be a prime example.
Yeah.
Like they know that line doesn't change too much, but the colors do.
Right.
I will say we sold this many SKUs. We sold this. So this is our plan. You just fill it in with what you guys are trending and what you guys are planning. Mm-hmm. And here's our budget. So but they are a brand rep. Do you know what I mean? They're still acting like a rep. It's not. And I don't know. I don't see there's an opportunity here though. I think I don't see too many owners filling that role.
Yeah.
Of who are small independent wholesalers.
Yeah. So the brand rep is more of an in-house salesperson that's just for that brand. It's not like a sales rep that has multiple lines underneath them, just to explain to the audience there. But most of the time what the process is, I'm the manufacturer, I reach out to you with the catalog, you go through the catalog, pick whatever SKUs you want, send it back to me. And I always tell my clients, like you as the manufacturer still need to go back and say, okay, I see that you ordered this. Some of these are other great sellers that fit with other things that's our chance to shine and show them our knowledge of our line and what's our best sellers. And again, like you said, be the eyes. And maybe the second set of eyes to let them know if there's holes or things that are missing. And I do think that's a missed opportunity that a lot of manufacturers are not taking advantage of.
I agree 100%. I did an email blast this last week and I sent it to my current list and I said, here's the top 24.
Yeah.
Like that's really important information. Right now I've got about 400 SKUs, give or take. But saying like these 24, these are hot. Sell all day long. Just make sure you're not missing any of this type of thing. And I know that maybe freaks people out, but it's amazing how many orders I got off of that too.
Yeah.
Cause and I'm lucky. And we could save that for another conversation maybe at some point, but I mean, I decided to position myself where we are manufacturing our own goods. And I know not every product category could do that, but I was outsourcing. I was using a manufacturer when I started. But what I learned quickly is, and this is just, it's a little bit motivated by my love for the environment and not wanting to throw things away, but just seeing that there's so much waste. And when I was buying, like if you buy a product that's bad, there is some stuff you can't even really give away, and there's waste in that. So like we are really, really flexible with I'm getting on the wholesale side of things, but I'm really flexible with how we can pivot and do things like that too. So I come up with ideas all the time and we can't, whether we're in wholesale or retail, we can't be afraid to fail.
Yeah.
Like, because we have to try things. I always liken buying to fishing, right? When I buy something for the first time, I'm going to buy in smaller quantities. I might buy sixes or 12s. For me, that's kind of smaller quantities and see what is hitting. And then when it hits, I'm going to go all in really, really fast on that type of thing. So the more we can do that, I'm doing that from the retail side, but I think there's opportunity to do that from the wholesale side.
I agree with you. Okay, so just to recap it, easy buying to you means clear communication as to best sellers, what's helping you maybe enhance an order and identifying blind spots of things you may have missed. I assume online ordering or just like easy methods of placing the order, clear communication. Those are the things you are looking for with your retailer hat on as you're ordering.
Can I write an order on a napkin when I'm eating lunch and take a picture of it and send it to you and that will magically arrive. That means a lot of things. And then another thing that we haven't talked about, and I'm sure that you help people with too, is have a prepack. your merchant.
Do you like them? I'm on the fence about these because I feel like every time I ever offered anything like that to a store, they wanted customizations. They wanted to change things. You like prepacks though for your shop?
If it's big and I'm really going into it, like especially if it comes with a display, and this becomes a whole different level of buying.
Yeah, it is. That's a upper, that's a higher level of buying for
But that's the level of buying that we like, because we're leveraging square footage and we need to see so much turn per square foot. Yep. So if I can have, you have to make a, this is really important. If people are in retail or in wholesale, you have to be able to make a statement with your product. Statement, sell. And if you can't just buy, I don't know, this is my belief is like, I just can't buy six SKUs of a product and put it on the shelf and expect it to sell. Like I need... Yeah. You know, say it's greeting cards, like I want a rack like of that one card company to make us. Well, that might be a poor example, but
no, it's a good example. I mean, I'm in the middle of our paper camp course right now, and I keep telling them like, this group was very put off, or not put off, that's not the right word. They were a little surprised when I said, you have to have at least 48 SKUs before you start wholesaling, because you need a large enough line that buyers can pick and choose and merchandise this well in their shop, which is what, to your point right now, right? And so I think, I appreciate you saying this because it is, we need to have a large enough line, but it needs to be quality product, not just us filling in holes trying to hit this 48 number. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes. And I liken it, this is how I explain it to my staff, and this is very much retail oriented. I say, if you're in a grocery store, right, and you have two bins of apples, like just visually pick at those big, big bins, and one bin has 12 apples in it, and the other bin is piled full of apples in there. It's a big pyramid of it, which, and they're the identical apples. Which bin are you going to pick out of? You're always going to go to the full one.
Yeah, always.
So having a full shelves and full displays, if for my product, and I know I've heard conversations and I can see that there's flip side, but I basically make it impossible for them to buy unless they're going to invest a certain level in a display and square footage of my product on it. And I'm looking for companies that are thinking along the same way, because visual merchandising, it makes, I can tell you in retail, you can just move a product to a different location. You can display it differently and it will sell overnight. So the more customers can help us visually make it appealing, our wholesalers, that's another piece that is really, really, really valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And you are in a unique situation too, in that you have a very large shop. So you have the square footage and the footprint where your buying is more, it's different than like a smaller boutique that has a smaller setting and a smaller footprint.
I should back up. Our store is 73 years old and it's like little rooms. We use every square inch. So we don't have, I should somehow send photos to go along with this or something, but no, we are very small square footage compared to how much we sell out of that.
Oh, interesting. Area. Okay.
Yeah. Just to let you know. No.
I didn't mean to make it sound
No, you didn't. And it wasn't even that. It was just like, you would be surprised like what we do with a very little, very.
How you merchandise it.
And I see that. I think, I see that in a lot of gift boutiques too, who are doing a lot with a little. Yeah.
I guess my point is just that like every buyer is different. Every method for how they purchase is different. Absolutely. Every, you know, their mix of products and all of it. So I don't know. I just want to thank you for coming and sharing how you're doing things right now and how you've been navigating COVID. Because I think it's really important for the product lines that are listening to hear from somebody on the other side. I've been talking with dozens of buyers in different ways in private conversations, but I, like you said earlier in the interview, we've all been in our little silos.
Yep.
And I think the more we can have these conversations of how you're being affected and how others are being affected and decisions we're making and tools that we're using, like that's going to improve and increase sales and revenue for everyone in the industry. Yes. So just thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Let's tell everyone where they can find you online to check out your store and also then your wholesale line that you have products for too as well.
Yeah, usually I'm not giving this out because I've got a team who takes care of this part on the Zizers, but I should even find out. Our store name is Zizers. It's Zaisers. And I believe we are everywhere at Shop Zizers.
All right. We'll double check that and make sure it's correct in the show notes.
And like I say, our store has been there for 73 years in that part. It's a family business that I grew up in the business, and then, and I've maybe talked about this in a previous broadcast, but then I spent 15 years as a professional photographer, and it wasn't super conducive for raising a family, living out of a suitcase in an airplane. And then I came back to that business about 9 years ago on that type of thing, when my parents were kind of at a point where they're like, oh, we're going to sell it, but if you have any interest to kind of come back into it, this is your chance. So
I
jumped back into that business.
Well, the business is clearly in great hands with you at the helm, Biff. So thank you so much. Thank you again for your time today.
Thank you, Katie.
Okay, I have so many thoughts swirling through my head after talking with Biff. First, I am so happy to hear that he and his team at Zeiser's are doing well and that business is steady and that revenue is pretty much back to normal. And I greatly appreciate him making the time to share his experiences and thoughts with us here today. There were a few things that stood out as we were chatting, and I just wanted to reiterate them for all of you here. First, every shop owner is different in how they have approached the last 6 or 7 months with COVID, right? Some brought their inventory online to focus on online sales. Biff chose not to do that, but instead he's connecting with his customers via video and live streaming. You know, ultimately, all of these shop owners, their buying patterns are shifting, their teams are changing, which leads me kind of to my next point, that secondly, we all need to stay flexible right now. We need to be overly communicative with our customers, and that's both from a selling perspective and telling people that we're open and shipping orders and things like that, but it's also on delivering our orders that we've received. So if you have that PO, just making sure that you are communicating clearly with the store if things are back ordered or delayed, or even if they're right on time, right? Relationships and customer experience and flexibility are just super critical right now. And third, I really liked what Biff had to say about not being afraid to fail. As I told my mastermind group earlier this year, now is the perfect time to do anything imperfectly. This is your opportunity to try something new, reach out in different ways, and continue again to build those relationships with our customers. Connection is what all of us need right now. So be sure to check the show notes for all of Biff's links, and you can also connect with him inside of our Proof to Product Labs community. As I mentioned earlier, he recently did a coffee chat session with our community where he answered questions with his buyer hat on. It was really enlightening and a fun conversation. So to access that replay of the video and the coffee chat, as well as all of our other trainings and resources and tools available inside of Proof to Product Labs, head to prooftoproduct.com/labs. For those that aren't familiar, Labs is my 12-month group coaching program. It was built specifically for product-based business owners, and we are covering all of the things you need to build a strong business foundation. So things like marketing and sales, team building, systems and strategies for scaling. And next month inside of Labs, we are focusing on optimizing our digital footprint with my friend Myrna Darmi. Myrna's going to show us how to ensure that we're leveraging our website, our social media, and any advertising efforts that we're doing to increase our visibility and ultimately our sales. So join us at prooftoproduct.com/labs if you want to attend that training live and ask all of your questions. Well, thank you for joining me today. If you found this episode helpful, make sure you share it with a friend, or you can head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and write a review. I do go read each and every one, and I very much appreciate them. So thanks again, guys. I'll be back soon with a new episode.